This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This is April 18th, and this is the Bruins Beat, presented by FanDuel on CLNS Media. Welcome into the Bruins Beat on CLNS Media. My name is Evan Marinofsky. Hope you guys are having a great day, a great week, and you're excited because it's playoff hockey time. It's an incredible time of the year, and you and I, we've been together through a lot of these playoff runs, and it's always interesting. It's always exciting, the highs and the lows. So on this episode, Connor Ryan and I get into some big questions surrounding Bruins Panthers. We give our reaction to game one, who looked good, who did not. We get into the Patrice Bergeron stuff, which is getting more and more interesting. We also get into, you know, could anyone from that was sitting in game one, could they come into the lineup for game two? And then we get into the big question of, do the Panthers have a chance? And I feel like a lot of people have a lot of different opinions on that. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Connor Ryan. And we're here with Connor Ryan. Connor, what is up?
Evan, I'm doing well. How you doing?
Doing great. Doing great. It is our first playoff episode, truly in the playoffs. And what a first night. What a first night of playoff hockey. You have, obviously, the Bruins beat the Panthers 3-1, but some of the games around the league, I was watching some of that Stars Wild game. I had to go to bed. So I was like, I can't watch the second overtime. I'm going to be up till, you know, two. That can't happen. And so it was a crazy game, and that Kings Oilers game was wild. So great to have playoff hockey back. Whenever playoff hockey happens, I'm always like, how did we do 82 games of just like regular season hockey? How did we manage through all of that? But fun times. How was the Garden last night? It looked incredible.
It was a vintage, I think, playoff game, I think, for Bruins and especially their fans. I mean, as soon as you found out that game one was going to be a marathon Monday, I think you knew that the crowd was going to be a little riled up. I think
they've been prepping
a little bit for a playoff game, hit the establishments a little early, had some time off, got a little rowdy. So crowd was great. And again, it's, you know, we've been fortunate enough to cover this team for a couple of years and cover a couple of playoff runs, but every year when you know, the Garden's rocking, the towels are going, you got Audio Slave playing for the playoffs, I think it always kind of hits different, right? So, and I think when you look at just how much enthusiasm is built around this season, especially, it made for a special night. Doesn't change regardless of how many times I think you've covered the playoffs. The Stanley Cup playoffs are always a joy and a privilege to cover. That's for sure.
It's a different animal. It is a different animal. And you know, it's funny. I was a little disappointed because the shirtless dudes who were in center field at the Red Sox game, I did not see them at the Garden. I didn't see them anywhere. I don't think they were there. They should have been there. They should have been on the ice for the anthem. I mean, they're you know, should have been there, and they weren't.
Let me tell you, Evan, considering the state those gentlemen were in, I feel like they couldn't even make it to Kenmore Station as opposed to TD Garden. Like,
true.
In one group. Be like, make way for ducklings. Like, those guys, if they formed, like, a group and walked there, there would be, like, two that actually would make it to the Garden. It would just be stragglers getting picked off one by one as they go down to over to the Garden.
Yeah, no, there was no way that they were making it. And I already know there's people watching this being like, get to the game. Talk about the Bruins. And it's like, well, we'll get there. Game one. I found this to be a microcosm of the Bruins season, in that they did not play their best. There were times they were outplayed. There were times the opposition was better. The Panthers, I actually thought, played a pretty good game through two periods. I mean, I think they played the Bruins well. And the Bruins still win. And I think that's been the thing the whole year. You have Ullmark and Nett, who's strong. You have, you know, again, just valuing quality chances over quantity, and you score some goals off of it. And suddenly you win the game. And I saw some people on Twitter who, you know, were more national, or, you know, who maybe didn't watch much of the Bruins, being like, oh, they don't look as great as we thought they were. That's been them this whole year, right?
Yeah. It's something where I think if you had to sum up like one word it is to how an opponent views the Bruins in terms of how tough it is to play them, I think demoralizing is the apt term there, right? It's something that I think even Montgomery mentioned early on this year in terms of how tough it is when you're matching up against this, you know, top rated defense, and you got McAvoy out there, and he goes back, you know, ends his shift, and Lindholm's out there. Now Orlov's out there, and how demoralizing that is. And I think it's a microcosm of just how tough they had to play against that. As you said, I don't think that was their best game. It was a B game, maybe a C game for extended stretches.
Montgomery called it a C plus game, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. So I think you look at that, it just shows that how tough they are, that even when like maybe they're not playing to their best, you don't see all segments of their game dip at the same time, right? Like they were not really clean with the puck early on, but it didn't lead to goals on the other end of the ice by Ullmark, right? You had like, it's not like the team kind of, everything kind of goes out of sorts at once. And as you said, Florida played a pretty good game. Like even if they didn't get as much rush chances, I think as much as you look at how good they are in transition, they're also a very good forechecking team, and they were causing a lot of turnovers, a lot of good looks around Ullmark, and he stood tall in that regard. But that, I think that's just how you view the Bruins as to why they're so tough. It's just like, you don't get them. You can't deliver the knockout blow. You can put them on the ropes for a little bit, but they always seem to find a way to kind of get through. And I think it's testament to the depth. I mean, you look at, without having Patrice Bergeron out there, that's if the Panthers were looking for a game to steal, that was it. So if you're the Panthers, who, again, you just snuck into the playoffs, but you're still a team a year removed from the President's Trophy, a lot of firepower, a team that, honestly, if you put them up against, I think, another run-and-gun team like the Devils, I wouldn't put it past them, like, beating a team like that. How are you, like, the Panthers, where you are, you know, in a rival building, you play a really good game, they don't have Bergeron, you still lose by 2 goals, right? It's just demoralizing.
Terrible. And I also think Lyon, I think they got to go to Bobrovsky. You know, again, Lyon made some really strong saves, some big ones and some acrobatic ones. But to let some of those in, I mean, even the Hathaway one that was called off with the, you know, hit his glove and put it in his own net. Like, it just, you need to go to Bobrovsky if you want to have a chance in this series, I think. And I don't think they have much of a chance. We'll get to that in a bit. And we'll also get to Bergeron in a bit. I was shocked on the post-game show last night, Connor. I looked at Natural Stat Trick, and the high-danger chances were 15-9 in favor of the Panthers. And, you know, I knew they had a lot of good chances, but to out-chance the Bruins that heavily. And then I realized that was mainly in large part due to Linus Ullmark, who makes everything look easy, who had another outstanding game last night. There weren't any, like, wild saves, I thought. There were some really strong ones and good ones, but there were none that, you know, and he's just never really out of position. And
yeah,
I think any fear, at least off of one game, one fear that we both had kind of coming into this was, is the goaltending going to hold up? You know, can Linus Ullmark bring it in the playoffs as well? And is he hurt at all? And I think after game one, I think we can confidently say he's good in the playoffs and he's probably not hurt, at least right now.
Yeah. I think it's how the season's gone all year for him. And that, I think we always have we envision the worst case scenario, right? With Ullmark, whether it's the workload, whether it's the playoffs, how he adjusts to these things. And every single time he's kind of shattered through whatever those expectations are in terms of where, how locked in he's been this year. And again, as you said, there wasn't a highlight reel stop, you know, per se, but again, Florida is so good with that offense in terms of kind of just creating chaos, creating second chance opportunities. You got a guy like Kachuk who can do a lot of damage with limited time and space, as you saw in that one goal, which is just more or less a bad break for the Bruins, a bad bit of puck luck. But throughout that stretch, though, Ullmark really stood tall there and really kind of bailed the team out. And I think, again, it just shows you that when various parts of the lineup can kind of take a dip, you have one group that kind of holds their own. So you look at that game, like the third period, I think that was probably the Bruins' best period. Didn't score any goals, but they really locked down. Florida didn't generate a whole lot of the Panthers in that final 20 minutes. But as a Bruin trying to find their game, you had Ullmark kind of standing tall there. So, I mean, that was huge for him and a good confidence booster for a guy that had, you know, probably a less than memorable run last year. Carolina was in a bit of limbo. Having a game like that, standing tall against a very high octane offense, has to be good for him in terms of getting on a bit of a roll here in the playoffs.
Yeah, and again, just kind of doing it early, getting out of the way. Hey, I can play in the playoffs, you know, no issue there. Speaking of someone who got who came out firing in game one, Tyler Bertuzzi. Oh man, great pass on the Pastrnak power play goal, but also took Nick Cousins' stick, said I'm taking that. Breaks it, or like at least like just tries to slam it into the boards. Didn't he say after the game, like, oh, like some stupid things happen or whatever? Like, no, I mean, embrace it, man. Like, that's hilarious.
I think Bertuzzi's in the school of Rich Peverly, where it's like, I will give very standard. He's like a Skyrim character. He's like, I will give very, very standard responses. So,
yeah,
I think he likes to play cool when he's not going to be cutting a WWE promo like Marshand or something.
He's high-fiving the reporters like, yeah, what'd you guys think of that? You know?
Yeah, yes.
No, it's sort of an NPC, non-playable yes. character type answers from him. But Fitz, I mean, again, we've said this, you know, ever since he got here, we're probably going to say it in the offseason. That guy's a Bruin. The way he plays, so impactful to this lineup. And I know that when Bergeron does come back, you know, what do you think? Should he go to the third line? Or like him and Pastrnak have a pretty good connection?
Yeah, it's going to be a really tough call for Montgomery to make there, right? Because they have been so good together. It's one of those ones you just wonder if Bertuzzi can play with anyone, whereas like Zaka is best suited with like the check line, right? I think that's probably the bigger thing, is to which player, if put in a new scenario, could still operate at a high level. So I would not be surprised if you see Zaka and Bertuzzi flipped around a couple of times. You even saw it in this past game with Krejci and Zaka kind of switched spots a little bit as the game went on. So I imagine there's going to be a good amount of toggling, but I think we looked in the past, even as soon as the Bruins got Bertuzzi, we're like, all right, Bertuzzi, Hall, Coyle, they're good to go. Now you look at just how good Bertuzzi's been with Pastrnak and how good they seem to find each other. I mean, that behind-the-back pass was absurd. And I think that's just a testament to – you can look at Bertuzzi and, you know, how he, you know, stirs stuff after the whistle, how he's a pain in the ass to play against. But I think one thing that's really stood out is just his ability to not just be like a net front present. He's not like a guy that's a big body down there creating havoc, but just how poised he is with limited time and space. I mean, to make that play and not to immediately – Montgomery mentioned it – not to immediately just kind of do like a backhand stuff right into Lyon's pads to like have the wherewithal in that split second to feed that puck back out to Pastrnak, is that's a special play by a very talented player. And I think having him in that net front creates a lot of options for the Bruins moving forward.
Yeah. Again, just fits well and good in space, and just going to be hard to take off that second line with Pastrnak. But again, I get Zaka, you know, Zaka has had the connection with Krejci and Pastrnak all year. I'm also curious to see Hall, Coyle, and Bertuzzi, just because I remember when the deadline happened, we all kind of said, oh my God, imagine if that's the third line. Like, I would like to see that in action. I thought Taylor Hall was actually pretty good last night. Because again, in zone, and we'll get to that in a second. I mean, it's, you know, they were not great with zone entries for a lot of the game. Hall was, you know, terrific at kind of doing that. Thought he should have shot the puck on that 2-on-1 with Frederick, but that's a whole nother thing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening to me talk, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now. Getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
So, Connor, everyone was wondering on Monday, what is up with Patrice Bergeron? And they said it was a game time decision. Now, Bridget Proulx of WEEI tweeted out that she was talking to Pavel Zaka after the game, and he said that he knew he was going to be the number one center, going in, like in the morning. What is the feeling with this? Because Bergeron plays through everything. Now, if it's just an illness, it's just an illness. But is this more than just an illness?
I mean, listen, I think Bergeron, like pretty much every single guy in the room, is also dealing with a nagging injury. I don't think it's something that is running the risk of, you know, derailing how much he's going to be able to play this postseason or anything like that. I think it has much more to do with the illness, which, again, not to be crass, but shit happens in terms of a stomach bug going through a locker room, right? So, listen, I think you look at Patrice Bergeron's track record of fighting through many injuries before. But that being said, I think when you look at where the Bruins are, how deep this team is, and just how many ways this team can get through wins, if Bergeron's not, you know, feeling remotely close to game ready in a situation like that, and even Jim Montgomery mentioned that this illness takes a lot out of guys, right? Like, it takes a while to recover. Lauko had it a few weeks ago and dropped 8 pounds.
Oh my God.
If this was a game seven or a critical game, I'm sure Bergeron's out there grinding his way through it, but it's not till, again, like, you don't want to say like this game didn't matter, but I think if it's the opening game of a first round series and you got a team as deep as you have, I think you have that luxury of letting a guy who's really fighting through an illness have a game off. I mean, the Bruins going into this series were 4-0 this year without Bergeron, held tall in that regard. And again, were they playing their best? No, but again, you had so many guys that stepped up in his absence. Like, you're concerned about the way the faceoffs are. I think Nosek was fantastic at the dot in that game. You had Nosek and Coyle's line matched up a lot with Barkov's line, which is not an easy matchup, and they held their own. Like, it's just indicative of just how this whole year has gone for the Bruins, where you have multiple guys step up when you have such a key player out of the lineup, and it's a testament to just like the way this roster has been built that you had that luxury of, all right, instead of sending Bergeron out there at 30%, right, fighting through, like, nagging injuries are already brutal to go through, like a stomach bug in a playoff game.
Oh,
holy, yeah, holy crap. So,
holy shit is right.
Yeah, exactly. So, again, I unfortunate that happened, and like the optics of everything, I'm sure, of like a game one excitement of a playoff, not having Bergeron out there, it's tough, but when you have a team as deep as this, you have that ability to rest a guy who is not remotely close to 100%.
Also, you mentioned it. It's the first round. You're heavily favored. And I don't want to dismiss any team because the Panthers are here for a reason. They have strengths, of course. But, you know, as you said, if I'm Jim Montgomery, I'm not forcing Bergeron out there for that. Like, you take your time a bit, you know? I mean, like, I don't know. I people were getting on me last night on the postgame show for saying that this, you know, you can try things out in this series because I don't see a scenario in which the Panthers come close to winning it. And I know that's a dangerous game to play in the playoffs, but I don't know. But yeah, I mean, the Bergeron thing's interesting. We'll see what ends up happening with him. Lineup decision-wise, do you foresee any changes going into game two? Because it feels like an interesting one. The Bruins struggled a little bit trying to break the puck out of their own zone. As you said, the Florida forecheck forced turnovers was, you know, hard to play against, things like that. Grizzly's pretty good at breaking the puck out and eluding pressure. Now, is he good with the physicality aspect of things? Not as good as the other one, as guys like Forbert and some others. But I don't know. I think Grizzly's worth a shot there.
Yeah, it's an interesting kind of dynamic. And you listen to Montgomery's comments after the game, something he was really happy with what Fulbert brought. And I think it probably comes down to just shutting down one key avenue for the Panthers, which is that power play. And, you know, Fulbert does help in that regard. You could like counter that by saying that the power play or the penalty kill for the Bruins was fantastic when he was on the men because you had Orlov and Lindholm step in. But it also goes back to, all right, if you have Fulbert taking those minutes and he's still playing at a high level in that regard, you also then can free up a guy like Lindholm or Love from, you know, away from those taxing minutes and down the other end of the ice. So, the Bruins have a tough call in that regard, right? Because as you said, like, Grizz, like, so good on breaking the puck out, how good he is with McAvoy, and you have so many options there. There really aren't any weak links throughout that lineup. So I have to imagine, barring a rough go from the PK or a situation where they get really hemmed in, that they're probably going to go back to Forbert in game two. But again, it's something I think we've echoed all these last few months, as soon as they got Orlov, in terms of balancing these seven defensemen, the Bruins are in a good spot because you're probably going to rely on all seven of those guys at various stages. And who knows who they play in the coming rounds. You know, if it's a team that's a little bit lighter, that isn't as reliant on their power play, more 5-on-5, then you go to Grizzlick more. Like, the Montgomery has the luxury of being able to kind of augment his decor to fit whatever matchup he has out there.
Another lineup thing. We mentioned this a little bit at the start of the show. If Bergeron does come back in for game two, who comes out? Because I think it really comes down to Frederick or Foligno. And I like Foligno on that fourth line. I think he's effective. Frederick had some good chances, though, in game one. What do you think?
Yeah, that's also going to be a really tough one because I think both guys play really key roles in the lineup, right? Like, again, it's such a good, it's a good problem to have, but it's tough because you're having a very, very good player slot out, right? You know, I'd say Frederick had the better game in game one, in terms of, you know, he had those two grade A chances, Lyon robs him, but was physical, you know, ratcheted up. And I think it's a testament to how much Frederick's game has grown that things got kind of nasty there various times. I mean, like Ekblad had that hit on Pastrnak. There was a few chances where I think Frederick could have, you know, really gone after a guy, put himself in the penalty box, what have you, but it's answering it with a heavy hit of your own, you know, getting involved after the whistle, those kind of things. And, you know, Foligno's still cut from that same cloth, but I have to imagine Montgomery's going to give Foligno a little bit more leeway to, you know, get the rust off, because I think he's talked so much about how key he is to this lineup. But it's a tough call, right? Because you've got both those guys playing in a high level, both guys play such key roles, and whoever rolls out, it's going to be a tough hit, right? Because if Frederick is the odd man out, you have a guy who almost had 20 goals on your third line being the odd man out. So it remains to be seen, but I have to imagine Montgomery wants to give Foligno another game or two just to see if he can kind of shake more of that rust off, because again, he hasn't played since end of February.
Yeah, it's a tough call either way. The ultimate question, and I hate doing this after game one. I honestly don't like this, because we've seen the Bruins win many game ones in the past, and you know, we all kind of go, oh, is this serious? Like, remember the Islanders series in 2021? We were all like, oh, Bruins, you know, blew the Islanders away in game one. The series, you know, they have no chance. Bruins are gonna be in the conference final. And we all know how that turned out. Really poorly for the Bruins. I don't think this is that case. So Connor, do the Panthers have any chance in this series after Monday night?
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at game two, if they go to Bobrovsky, who again hasn't really been a model of consistency this year, especially in Florida. But still, you look at his resume, you look at what he's done in the past, he's still a guy that at the very least gives you a different dynamic in a game like that. So we're not be surprised if he gets a look. And I think you look at Florida's offense, it's too good that, you know, they're gonna have some breaks go their way. I mean, 15 high danger chances. Their team's kind of been plagued all year by generating high danger looks, but not really finishing. But again, all it takes is a puck dribbling past a guy or a rebound popped out to one player to kind of change that a little bit. So I feel like they're due for at least one game where they are going to get some goals in on the Bruins. But I think you just look at how the Bruins match up against them and what, you know, Florida's biggest Achilles heel is, which is that defense that even though they can generate a lot, they just can't, I think, over an extended series, contain the Bruins over that stretch, especially if that Bruins power play continues to heat up. And you look at the way Panthers kind of deploy their PK, it's a lot of pressure on guys up high, which if Bergeron's back, going to leave a lot of real estate for him in the bumper where the Bruins do a whole bunch of their damage. So, again, I'm still sticking with five games, but I just don't see Florida has the means to just win every game 6-5, right? Like, they don't have the personnel to do that and hold off the Bruins on the other end of the ice.
Yeah, I still think the Panthers steal a game. I think they win a game in Florida, but I just don't. Four games? No, I don't see that happening. I guess, I mean, the only thing that could is if Bobrovsky came in and went sicko mode, as us kids say.
Yes.
Like that,
yes.
That to me would be your best, their best chance if that happened. And I still don't know if you're edging four games out of that. You know, I think maybe you steal a game or two, you push it to six, but taking four, I don't see it. I don't see it. I know people are going to say, oh, why are you saying the series is over? I don't know. It's not a lot over there on that other side, but they'll make it interesting. There was some bad blood last night. Playoff hockey is good no matter what, as we saw on Monday night. Connor, what can people look forward to from you over at Boston.com and the Boston Globe?
Yeah, we're going to have you covered every step of the way this playoff run with game recaps, features, columns. Had a story that came out yesterday looking back at the 10-year anniversary of the Bruins first game back from the marathon bombing. Which
was phenomenal, by the way.
Yeah, it was great to kind of talk to a few people about reflecting on a game like that. But we'll have plenty of other projects very similar to that throughout this playoff run as we kind of document this team and, you know, just how many twists and turns there are over the course of a long playoff run. So we'll have you covered every step of the way over at Boston.com and the Globe. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at ConnorRyan_93.
Go do all that. And remember to subscribe to New England Hockey Journal. That is Connor Ryan. I'm Evan Marinofsky. You Bruins Beat listeners, have a great rest of your week.